Hey, how are you doing? Are you struggling to relax and switch off from the hyperactivity of everyday life? Then take a quick dip with me, Suzanne Duckett, health and beauty journalist and author of my new book, Bathe, as we rediscover the oldest art of relaxation. While my guests bear all and share their helpful strategies for overcoming modern physical and mental challenges to help us chase away the blues. And we promise you won't be left behind. In this show, you will experience each treatment side by side with us as we share the benefits, secrets, and sounds of bathing in various forms, gasping, squealing, and laughing along the way. This week, I'm joined by chef, author, and old mucker, Melissa Hemsley, for a water Rasul ritual at the spa at the Mandarin Oriental in Hyde Park. Rasul means to wash, and this traditionally Arabic thermal cleansing mud treatment combines heat, steam, and mud to relax and condition the skin, so perfect for melting away winter woes. As one half of the Hemsley sisters, Melissa is a passionate advocate of healthy eating, and I was curious to hear her most effective recipe for well-being, and I wondered if naked mudding would become one of them.
And I've always struggled with calling myself a chef, and I think it could be imposter syndrome, but I am a chef because I'm a professional cook, so I'm a chef. But, you know, growing up, I thought being a chef was shouty Gordon Ramsay, or like uber perfectionist, really serious Gary Rhodes, who I used to kind of quite fancy when I was about four.
What about Michael Pierre White? He was intense.
Oh, no, yeah, he always scared me.
As you know, my dad was very ill for a long time and then died 4 years ago, just gone. And I couldn't grieve. And the one thing that's got me there is acupuncture. And I was going to acupuncture for other reasons, but yes, it's the one time I've been able to release.
So I always do this when I come into a spa. I start sort of whispering and talking really quietly because they're a little bit like a church, actually. They're these sort of temples of wellness and ritual and hushed, whispery voices that I'm just going to press this. And if you haven't been to a posh spa like this before, it can be a little bit intimidating because they're so beautiful and sort of swanky and opulent and quiet. But you know, you've got to embrace it, because that's half of the beauty of coming to these places. I love just being away from the noise and the stress, and everything slows down. And I think that's what people forget, that you're also buying that as part of your treatment. You're not just buying a massage or a facial. You're also buying this whole experience, because it is like being in another world in here. I mean, I feel like we've probably gone down, we're subterranean again, underground, and you are away from it all, literally.
This bowl of pearl, are they pearls?
Ooh. These are pearls with some rose petals.
Yes.
So normally these pearls are actually for the Tin Kwan treatment, but because today of the special occasion you ladies are having, we put some pearls in so you can have the full experience.
Mm. This is bonding, Melissa.
Yeah, I'm bonding
Friends
with
for
you.
Life after you've done
also,
a thing like this.
I just love putting the robe on, even if we sat here and didn't have anyone giving us heavenly foot massages that we're having right now. Oh. Just putting on a robe,
I know,
just feels so good.
And that towel, by the way, is probably the softest towel I've ever put my feet on.
And I'm going to steal it.
It's like terry toweling.
Do you count the towels when people leave, just to make sure they haven't stolen them? Because I'm going to steal one.
Good to know. One in each bag.
I might start doing that when I get home. I've got this robe, a Mazzoni robe that my boyfriend got me for my birthday 3 years ago. It must have cost him a fortune. And we're not usually like that. But I think he got it because he knew that he would wear it too.
Yes.
And I always like a multi-purpose gift. Mm-hmm. But I never wear it because when I get out of the bath of an evening, I'm a bit oily and I love that. And then I'll let myself sort of air dry and then I get straight into bed naked. So I never wear it then.
Yeah.
And then in the morning when I have a shower, I'm rushing. So then I don't put the robe on. So I never wear the robe.
Why don't you start to do a new ritual that when you come in, go and have a little shower and then put your robe on?
Shower.
Obviously, I'd never prescribe shower instead of a bath.
Yeah, clearly. Exactly.
Author of Bathe. But because we've just had our shoes taken from us upstairs, which I love, because then you can leave the outside out.
Yeah.
And you've got to feel the ground, because otherwise your brain's not getting that connection, that sort of circuit of mindfulness hitting the, and then the, you know, so it's very interesting. Very interesting.
Oh, this is lovely.
Oh, talking of feet.
It's amazing how much tension you hold in your toes.
Yeah.
So tell me what your bathroom's like, because I've tried to turn my bathroom into a spa.
Bathroom. Oh. I know. Spathroom. I don't have a bathroom, I have a spa. Actually, do you know, it's quite simple.
Yeah.
Because
I'd like to go up into the loft.
Yeah.
When we extend, and that's where our proper bathroom will be. Yeah. So this is going to be the family and guesty bathroom, so I had to be quite classic with it. Yeah. But lovely bathtub and a shower, because often I do the two. I'll get in a hot bath and do a bit of cool showering, back in the hot bath, bit of cool showering.
That's your thing.
So white herringbone tiles.
Yeah.
And then pale grey walls. So quite classic.
Mm-hmm.
But we're getting a sauna for the garden.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, because I love getting in a sauna and then just rolling on the grass.
Are you a bit Scandinavian?
Yeah.
I can tell.
Yeah.
That's your Scandinavian side coming out.
Yes.
Oh, there's a ting coming.
The tincture bells. So we're going to just chime these tincture bells, and this represents the start of the treatment. And when you next hear it, it will be the end of the treatment.
Okay, lovely.
Close your eyes for me. Keep your feet nice and grounded. Try and have a clear mind. And take a nice deep breath in through your nose and out through your mouth.
I did nearly go then.
You were smiling.
Was I?
You look like you're having a lovely fantasy.
Mm, where was I? I can't remember where I was. Isn't that weird?
That ting got you.
It's brilliant.
It did.
Yes.
And that foot massage was...
It was lovely, thank you.
Actually, I know where I went. I went to Thailand.
Oh. Did you?
And I remember many, many, many years ago, I was in this spa in Thailand, and something similar to this was happening, except for I was naked, and I was on a little wooden block, and a much older Thai lady, she was in her... probably 70 odd, was doing a Balinese scrubby thing.
Lovely.
And I just said, oh, I feel like a princess. And she said, no, a baby.
Oh,
and
I'll
never forget that. And that just reminded me, I felt like, you know, when your mum takes care of you.
And when you were drying between our toes.
Who's got the time to dry between
our toes?
But also that's the only other person that would do that, unless you had a foot fetish, which I'm just saying I don't.
Yeah.
Would be your mum.
Yeah, drying between your toes.
Or you know, your dad or someone that loves you as your baby and drying you. So that's where I went. Oh, so I was smiling.
Oh, good.
So your foot ritual is now complete.
Lovely.
The eccentric blanket is on. It's on about like a low to medium. If you want the bed slightly higher, we can increase. Or if you would like it lower, we can decrease.
Okay.
So you're both going to be underneath here.
Yeah.
And on top of there. So we are going to start with the back of the body. So if you can lay face down.
Oh, that's
down.
So nice. Thank you.
This is like a giant magical cat is walking down my body.
I keep my bathroom and try and make it into a spa. So I don't take my bath till it gets dark, which I quite like, because obviously in the winter, in the summer, it was a real struggle because it was such a hot summer and I'm a hot person, and it wouldn't get dark till 9. And then I would feel too hot to get in the bath, so I'd have some nice cool ones. But now I love the winter because I've been finishing work early, doing some yoga, eating dinner by 7, and then trying to get in the bath sort of no later than 10.
What I try to do in the winter, which is bring it all a bit forward. So if you were to have your bath before you eat,
really?
And then sit, have a hot bath, then get dried and put a robe on, and then go out into the open air and sit and cool down outside is really amazing to help get a good night's sleep and then have you really relaxed before you then eat. Do you see what I mean? So that you're doing the bath wind down so that your whole evening
it's
is lovely and relaxed.
It's
yeah.
Wind down.
Mm.
That's fantastic.
So try that, because this spiking the temperature with hot water and then lowering it with the cool air is very good for the immune system, nervous system, helps get the circadian rhythm nice and balanced. So, you know, it's just a thought.
Oh, wow. I always feel when I'm at home and I try and exfoliate myself at home, I never quite... Home exfoliators never feel like they're doing enough.
On dry skin.
Yeah, yeah, that's the key, isn't it?
Most of us get in the shower or the bath.
You're right.
And then when the skin's wet, so the product just slips off.
So when I'm working from home, I'll shut down my laptop, turn the bath on. Yeah. When it's running, I'll do a bit of dry body brushing, yeah. Light a candle,
yeah.
Get in the bath, enjoy that for 20 minutes. Do you know what's quite nice as well, Suzanne? Because my book is 30-minute meals, yes. And a lot of them are tray bakes. Ooh. You can put it into the oven, then get in the bath.
I love it.
Then by the time you got out of the bath, you can have your cool down and then you're ready to eat.
Perfect. You see, that's proper self-care, isn't it? Well, people do make time for the accounting and the loading the dishwasher and, you know,
yeah.
Cleaning, housework, working life, you know, the chores. So you've got to put yourself and the enjoyment factors in that mix. Otherwise, you just become pretty miserable, actually. Mm. Especially now with anxiety's pretty full on now, you know. The pressures of modern life.
You know what, I've tried a million types of therapy and treatment, mm. And a bit like what we were just saying, and you were saying that you've learned in 25 years that everyone's saying in their own special way sort of the same thing, is that, you know, basically little and often mm. Well, often is the most important, consistency, yes. In doing something every day. And for me, the bath is that. So even if I haven't yogured or got outside and put my face in the sun, even on a winter's day, or
yes.
Walked Nelly, or what it is, that I can always spare 15 minutes to get in the bath. And I'd never had a bath. I lived in army houses, there might have been a bath at some point, but we as a family never got in the bath, ever,
really?
Ever.
Really?
Not us as a family en masse, but we didn't do bath time.
Did you
not? No.
And was that purely because you didn't have a tub, or...?
No, so I think sometimes in some of the army houses we had a tub, but it was just not what you did.
It wasn't the culture of it,
just you had a quick power shower. Oh, we were always, yeah, a quick power shower. And in my family, even showers are just something that you did, and you got in and out in 55 minutes. And speaking of towels, we always had, if my mum listens to this, she'll tell me off. She hates me telling stories about things. I once said about how my mum used to drink out of jam jars. Which is so trendy now, and
yeah,
and absolutely. but she hates me telling that. Anyway, I just said it again. Let's hope she doesn't listen. But as you know, my dad was very ill for a long time, and then died 4 years ago, just gone, and I couldn't grieve. And the one thing that's got me there is acupuncture, and that's really. And I was going to acupuncture for other reasons, but
yes.
It's the one time I've been able to. Release, and it's the only time I can release.
That's so interesting. How did you know what was coming up was your dad related? Was it you kept thinking of him?
Because, well, I can cry, you know, if I've had an argument with my boyfriend or had a shitty day, I can do that kind of superficial crying, if that makes sense.
Mm.
But this was totally from my guts crying.
Yeah.
I could feel it. It was like I didn't even recognise myself, and at first I was like, oh, I'm so sorry, you know, because I was there about something completely different,
yes.
In an acupuncture room. It wasn't a spa-like environment, not that it wasn't a lovely environment, it was, mm. Wasn't designed to be, it's just a practical room, and I was covering my face and going, I'm so sorry, and the amazing lady was going, no, this we found it now, so.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, how powerful is that deep-seated grief? That if
yeah.
That isn't, and I really believe, this is why I love this world of wellness, if you don't let that out, I think that does become something
yeah.
else, illness-wise. And, you know, that ill at ease,
yeah.
Which is Latin for disease, you know, it's... When we're ill at ease within our spirit, most, I think, illness comes from emotions. And whether it's acupuncture, whether it's massage, I think you have to have... someone else involved, a practitioner, to help you release those emotions. I really do. I think it's difficult to do that by yourself, you know, and that's why I
yeah.
think the hands-on therapies, I mean, there are so many to choose from, and how amazing that that's starting to come out.
Yeah, exactly.
And how surprising for you, maybe, that it came out during that treatment. There's probably other things you've
yeah.
done that thought maybe it would help.
Well, yesterday, I think it was, or 2 days ago, you know those, you know when you get emails saying, can you please click on this petition and add your signature? And I went and clicked on one, and then it immediately pops up another one, and you know, I just sat there and clicked on 10 of them, all amazing reasons to click on something. And then one of them said National Grief Day, campaign to get a National Grief Day where people can feel that they can talk about a loved one, whether it was a week ago or 10 years ago. Anyway, I clicked on it 2 days ago, and then I think I got an email today. I haven't read it, but I think it said we've reached the number of signatures. We're going to take it to Parliament. And it just goes to show nobody gets through life without someone close to them dying is the sad thing.
I just think that in this culture, expressing your emotions of this, the tricky ones, the sadness, the grief, the anger, the disappointment, is so not celebrated. You can show your happiness, your success, your pride. I mean, all those emotions that are achievement-based. But the moment you're showing things that are loss-based, people get very scared. Yeah. And they run away from that. And I think when we run away from that, that's when we get in trouble, because you're finding things to hide it. There's a really interesting book called Molecules of Emotion by this amazing scientist who later on in her science career started to realise, against her will originally, that we do hold trauma in our cells, and we've got to get it out, got to learn to be able to express that and get it out, because it's part of being human. It's what makes us so amazing, that we can feel pain as well as love. Her name is, I think it's Candice Pert. I remember her full name. But she was up for the Nobel Prize. She was a female scientist in a time where there weren't very many female scientists getting revered. Really amazing. And then that got me a number of years onto this whole awareness that we've got to somehow express our emotions.
So, yeah, I'll just get that out again. Oh, that was lovely, wasn't it?
That is nice.
Suzanne, may I
rose wash your lower body? Here.
Oh, that's lovely.
Welcome back.
Mm.
Have you come round yet?
I'm coasting along this wave of pleasure.
You've relaxed really well. Can I be honest? I wasn't sure that you'd get this relaxed.
Today, or do you think in general?
No, well, I think today, because you are such a ball of amazing energy, and you are sunshine. It's hard to just imagine then someone zenned out who's always so full of dynamism. Is that accurate? Are you surprised how much you've relaxed? Or?
Yeah, but I will say I feel like the lady that looked after me just hit all the sweet spots early on.
Yeah.
And
but you've given in.
I've given in.
Yeah.
I've given in.
I feel really happy.
Thank you so much for bringing me.
You're not often speechless, are you?
No, can you tell? I can't really speak.
But you know,
I've got a bit of a monotone voice going at the moment.
And not go for a pee though for a little while, because you've been doing a lot of peeing.
I wee so much, don't I?
This is there's no holds barred in this conversation, is there? You see,
no.
You know, if you want to get the truth from someone, get them really relaxed, because that's the way. Can I make a confession?
Tell me.
I didn't think that we would manage to get you this. Like speechless.
You've never heard me be quiet before, have you?
No, because you're just a ball of dynamic sunshine, fire, energy, ideas, writing books on Instagram, supporting amazing charities. You are a dynamo, and I sometimes worry how you relax, but you've managed. They've rendered you speechless.
I've been gently pummeled into relaxation. I definitely think that this was the year that I grew up in terms of looking after myself, because after 3 books and 3 times putting my life on hold to make sure they were as good as they could be, and that my message was as, you know, out and about and touring, you know, not touring like a rock star, just touring up and down the country and to various other countries. But I just kept writing this list of things I'll do when the book's done. And nothing's, if you really believe in something, it's never ever done. So you always go, I could do a bit more, I could do a bit more. And so, this is the year that I've grown up and gone, nothing. I think I've always learned you don't have to put 1,000,000,000% into things.
Well, otherwise it's okay. There's no point burning out, is there? No matter what, you know, no matter what the passion project is. And
you know, when I think about where you came from within the world of wellness, which is...
I thought I was going to say Kingston upon Thames.
Yeah. Which is, you know, being a healthy chef, really. But that doesn't really sum it up, because you're involved in so many areas of wellness. How do you describe what you do to people when someone says, what do you do?
I know, I struggle. You know what? Every time my publishers or we sit down or I work with somebody on a project, I always go, well, can you sum yourself up in a sentence? And I struggle to, not because I think I'm any kind of special person that can't be summed up, but it's the thing I love, the thing I get the most enjoyment out of and go to bed happy is coming up with a great recipe that somebody who's not confident in cooking or not confident that they can make something delicious for themselves and be satisfied and feel good from it, it's passing that on to them. So sometimes it's a recipe, like today I posted a recipe and I'll get lots of lovely messages from people go, I'm going to try that, I never cook, I'm going to try that. And then maybe from the weekend I'll get pictures of them making it. So it can be like that with, you know, people that are strangers to me or part of my people that follow me, which is, you know, lovely that they bother following me. There's a lot of people to follow. But then it could also be someone I private chef for or a loved one or somebody who's paying me as a project. And I just know that we all deserve, every single person deserves good food. Mm. Everybody deserves to eat enough food. Everybody deserves to eat food that nourishes them.
But you know, what's although you became successful in a way quickly, it's not like you came from the unknown world of food and then started writing cookbooks. You were cooking for quite well-known people, weren't you? That's a nice big yawn.
Yeah.
Am I boring you?
No, I can't. I'm going to yawn again now. Hey.
I love it.
Can I pass that? How come you're not yawning back?
Because I'm immune to relaxation. No, I'm like Teflon to spa.
Yeah.
I'm so sparred, I can just turn it on, turn it off.
You're spa. Yes.
Because you're not
Jazz and
you're
I. Yeah.
Not a traditional chef, are you? In terms of like
not a traditional
chef school.
Not a traditional chef, and I've always struggled with calling myself a chef, and I think it could be imposter syndrome, but I am a chef because I'm a professional cook, so I'm a chef. But you know, growing up, I thought being a chef was shouty Gordon Ramsay or like uber perfectionist, really serious Gary Rhodes, who I used to kind of quite fancy when I was about 4 or 5.
What about Margot Pierre White? He was intense, wasn't he?
No, yeah, he always scared me.
Yes.
And I didn't have anyone but Delia as a woman to look up to in the food world. And then, of course, Nigella came along. But I just thought that was not a job for me at all. And now that I am a professional cook, a chef, I guess I like to think that I've inspired other people that they can cook. You know, everybody needs to eat. And there's so many ways that the food industry can be a part of. And the food industry is such an exciting industry. There's so many things going on with it at the moment. I don't think I even told you this. I was working on a project, wrote a sustainability guide for 30 UK restaurants, and I loved it because I was chatting to farmers and suppliers and the chefs and the customers and all these people, and I constantly fall in love with food all over again.
Yeah, well,
there's so much to know.
You must know Guy Watson at Rutherford.
Yes.
I've got a major like crush on him.
He's brilliant,
isn't
he?
Don't tell him.
Okay, I won't
tell him.
Actually,
do tell him, because I...
Do you know who you'll also have a crush on? His wife, Geeti. Have you ever met her?
I haven't, but I've heard about her. I just have a crush on his way.
His passion is brilliant.
You know, and as you say, having this cooperative take on food, which is amazing. But when you were private chefing, and you're not going to want me to ask this, but I'm going to ask it, what famous people were you private chefing for? Because...
Gosh,
that,
you cheeky. You got me all relaxed and
well,
now you expect me to
Google
spill.
Otherwise. You may as well just let's hear it from the horse's mouth.
Okay, well, we started off Jazz and I, and you know, we weren't even called Hemsley and Hemsley then, which was a name that we struggled to come up with. It honestly took us about a year to come up with our surnames and putting them together.
Yeah.
But our clients used to call us their food fairies because we'd go in, we'd cook their food in their houses, we put it in the fridge or freezer. Sorry, I'm yawning again. Sorry, very
unprofessional. So you'd go cook in the house?
yeah, cooking the house. Sometimes they went on tour and we'd send food. Sometimes went to Barbados with them once. Them being, well, we never really talked about it before because not that anyone asked us not to, but I'll say now only because Gary Barlow, as in Gary Barlow, he brought a book out at the end of last year about his relationship with food from start to finish and how he's in this really positive place now where he's very in control of and in love with the way that good food makes him feel. Anyway, so one of our first clients was Gary and the lovely guys and Take That and their families. And then from that, some actors, theatre actors, film actors, you know, I must be discreet. But the important thing is these were all...
I heard Madonna, is that a myth?
You heard Madonna? Mm. Are you lying?
No.
Are you just trying to slip that in?
No.
No, never cooked for Madonna. Okay. Madonna. I'm so tired.
You see, this never is the only podcast you're allowed to just slur.
I'm going to yawn again. Did you genuinely hear Madonna?
I did. Yeah.
No.
I did.
Should have said, maybe.
You should have said
no. I've never met Madonna.
But, you know. Mm. It's interesting, though, because the world of food is so loaded, isn't it? And, you know, even with you guys who do it so well and your recipe books and from when you were doing more H&H with Hemsley and Hemsley and then obviously you and Jazz are kind of doing your own thing as well now. You have been criticised as well at one stage, haven't you? Being part of that movement of, oh, well, you know, the exclusion diets and not having dairy, not, you know, did that affect you for a while? Was that, how have you coped with that side?
I think it made me a little bit annoyed purely because we have a real crisis. We've got an obesity crisis. There's a lot going on that,
and
you know,
diabetes,
top,
and sugar
top
and
people
that.
And top experts and top doctors know food has a part to play. And I think, you know, it's 2019 now. I don't think anyone would argue that food has got a part to play in our health. So it made me a bit annoyed that we were deflecting from the real issue. And what mainly annoyed me was people saying, I remember reading one article and then in the end, of course, they printed a correction, but it's too late. They were like the sort of dairy-free, meat-free, whatever-free. And I just thought, well, you haven't read our books ever because you
the
know
bone
that
broth
we're...
girls.
Yeah. You know, you see so many things written about yourself that are completely untrue and you could spend all day writing to newspapers and correcting people and saying, well, that's not true. If I could send you a copy of the book, you'd see that's not true. I'm sure lots of people get the wrong end of the stick and write wrong things. So I do find that annoying that it detracts from what's the real issue. But
because, as you say, it's about home cooking, and it's not you've never said don't eat this, or you've just talked about alternatives to give people a bit more education and what else is out there.
Yeah, I remember going on one cookery show, I won't name it, where we were cooking, you know, something with meat, but also probably 15% meat on the plate, or even 10% and 90% vegetables. And then we cooked it, and it was delicious, and it looked good. And then I remember the host saying, right, let's get some real food on now, let's get some real meat. And I remember thinking, gosh, well, actually, we don't, as a nation, need to eat so much meat. We need to eat better quality meat, and we need to eat more of the animal so that we're not wasting the animal because everyone's just going for the chicken breast or the best cut of steak. But I thought it was very interesting that...
That was deemed not real food.
Not real food. I might get a little bit annoyed by things like that because I just think, oh God, that's, you know, really, really irresponsible, I think.
Boring.
I think
it's
irresponsible to print articles saying that somebody is one thing when they're not.
Yeah.
But at the same time, as I say, you cannot correct anyone. And what I've realised is all you can do is do your own thing. And, you know, the great thing about social media is I can, and my website and my newsletters and my books, but the books you've got to pay for, it's so important to give free information and free content and free recipes and make sure people trust you. They're not just going to buy your book because you say, oh, this celebrity's written a quote for it. I document the food I eat. I'm always really honest and I'll say, you know, this is more of an expensive meal, the ingredients are more expensive, which is rare, and then I'll be like, this meal is made with leftover broth from the Sunday roast and these carrots, and then I've put these carrot tops in it as well. And I think people really like learning a little bit about food technique, or a little bit something a bit foodie. So, you know, maybe carrot tops mm-hmm. being used, or something they haven't thought of.
Carrot tops.
What, the greens, the carrots, yeah. make a
I normally throw those away.
Pesto. No, give them a nice clean, because yeah. they get, you can make a pesto, or you can stir fry them. They're lovely. So I like to give some zero waste tips, no waste tips. You know, I come from an army background, a Catholic mum, where we don't throw anything away.
And did you, and I was going to ask actually, did yeah. you learn the cooking skills from your mum? Because your mum's from the Philippines,
Mum's
right?
from the Philippines.
Dad
couldn't
from...
cook, he couldn't cook a thing. He was in the army. Yeah, I picked up, mum never sat me down and said, this is how to cook. She never baked a cupcake with me, though I would have loved her to.
Aww.
But... from observing her and watching her carry herself in the kitchen, which, what am I saying? I couldn't really watch her. You know, it was very much like, get out of the way, here's the chore, bang, bang, bang. But what I knew was happening in the kitchen was she'd look in the fridge and she would find a meal based on what was there. She would rustle it up, and she could do that with very little, and she wouldn't go out shopping until she had finished the fridge. And she also taught me massively about the freezer. I remember meeting someone, or, you know, maybe if I'd start going out with a boy and I go around to his house and you know, obviously I'm not on the first date, but at some point I'd look in his freezer and I'd be like, why haven't you got food in the freezer? He'd be like, why would I put food in the freezer? In my whole life, I've grown up in, you know, 14 army houses where the freezer is always full of food ready to go. So whenever my mum cooked, she would make extra.
Batch.
Yeah,
or she would buy, she'd get a deal, batch cooking.
But she'd also go to the market and get the good quality meat, and she would do a deal and she'd buy it in bulk.
She'd have to use it.
And then she'd put it in the freezer.
I love that. I think, but don't you think that's where then, you know, food is not just about the nutrients on the plate, and as you say, it's about the zero waste, it's about being frugal, it's about getting people to sit together. So did your mum do all the cooking, your dad just, did he...
He wasn't massively around much because he was always away. And then if he did come, when he did come home, he'd be home really late. But he would eat the same as us. He would have whatever was left over. My mum would reheat it for him. But
so if he did have to ever cook, what would it be?
Oh my God, he never cooked. Never, ever, ever cooked. Ever. Apparently he once, I think there was maybe like a few days. You know, my mum worked 6 days a week. Apparently a few days, or maybe on a Saturday when my mum was working, my dad would just feed us pork pies. Just pork pies and pork pies.
Out of the bag. Out of the
breakfast,
package.
Lunch and dinner.
Really?
I do love a really good pork pie. That just reminded me. I haven't had a pork pie for years.
Oh, but so... it's because I was trying to work out how long we've known each other. And I think your dad passed away about a year before... from when we met.
Yeah,
so, and he's,
true.
So he
died 4 years ago.
Okay, so I've known you about five
years.
Yeah,
you've known me about 5 years.
And so had he seen your success starting?
Well,
Dad's?
Well, he was a hard man to please. Like my mom and dad are both, you know, they don't get too excited about stuff. But yeah, luckily he managed to see one book, the first book, be printed, and he had a really long illness. He was very, very, very ill with cancer for a long time, and it was really bad at the end. But even in his hospital bed, I remember him proofing our first book.
Did he?
After the proofreaders had proofed it. And he was so good. He was such a clever man, and he would find so many things.
Okay, so maybe he wasn't being very outward with his expression.
Exactly.
He was, I mean, to do that, he must have been very proud and very into what you were
proud.
Doing.
And I remember actually the week before he died, or maybe 2 weeks before he died. I think it was 2 weeks before he died. For our first book, we were up for a National Book Award. And I remember... getting, you know, all dolled up with jazz and saying goodbye to him, because, you know, we didn't know when he would die. You know, it was like touch and go all the time. So it's like, bye, we've got this National Book Award, be nominated, we're off. And I remember we almost didn't go to the awards because we were like, is there any way to find out? You know, when you're like,
yeah.
You know,
do I need to go?
It's an important award, but it's not like, it wasn't the Oscars.
No.
So, you know, we didn't want to leave our dad, and we were like, let's not go or not go. And they were like, look, we're not going to know whether you've won or not. And my mum said, go. So we said goodbye to him and went. And apparently my dad said, I'm worried that they're going to be by themselves and not... which is not very like him. But anyway...
What, so if you didn't win, he wouldn't be there to console you?
Yeah. And in the end, we didn't win. Ottolenghi won. And I so wanted to win to tell him.
Yeah.
And I almost thought about lying to him. Obviously, I would have gone straight to hell, but I just wanted him to know.
To be part of that success story. Like,
and I genuinely thought about lying, but I didn't. And then he died.
And so that was a couple of weeks. And what... So that's what now, what, yeah. 5 years ago?
Four years ago. Four and actually, ago. You know, haven't really dealt with the grief. I think I've always...
Is that getting onto your busyness as well? So did you...
I just... Do you know what? And if anyone's listening and they know anything, I kept saying to myself, I really want to go away somewhere. I wonder if there's like grief weekend retreats. I've never just sorted myself out and Googled it.
Oh, I can tell you some people.
Can you?
Yeah,
I feel like I want to go somewhere and have a really great
cry.
But acupuncture has really helped me. Didn't know that acupuncture could help me in that way. I was going to acupuncture for various ailments, including this crazy skin flare-up that I couldn't really work out where it was coming from. Anyway, so I was like, I'll try acupuncture because for me it's worked on various things. So I went to go and have my face looked at, and then in the end some acupuncture started, and I just started literally wailing deep from my gut, deep from my soul. Have you ever cried or made a noise and you didn't realize it was you?
Yeah, because it sounds different.
Yeah,
there's a different sound, isn't there?
It's a different kind of crying. So that was definitely some of that grief being released,
and the acupuncture helped trigger that release.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
And I really, really love acupuncture. I really love it. I think because you said it just a minute ago, you didn't think you'd see me so relaxed. I think because I like relaxation. I like things where you can really feel it.
Mm.
And with acupuncture, it's not that you feel the needle, but you can. I really feel the benefits as soon as the needle goes, you know, pretty much straight away.
Absolutely. And I think what's so powerful about that treatment is it does bring things up that need to come up. And, you know, grief is... I don't know about... I mean, you've worked quite a lot with mental health.
Yeah.
As a mental health ambassador. And, you know, those feelings of grief, sadness, pain. You know, and I think we were talking that grief's not just about when someone passes away. There's all sorts of grief about life not working out the way it's supposed to, or you thought it was going to, or that person emigrating that you adore, or someone dying. It's a really massive emotion, and it gets really suppressed, don't you think, in this country?
Big time.
And I think that we've got to find a way to let that out. And whether it's talking to... I mean, because you can talk to girlfriends. I mean, did you talk about your dad passing away to friends? Or did you just go almost like...
Honestly, I just didn't want to, because he'd been ill for so long. I was so tired. We were tired, all of us. Me, Jazz, my mum the most, was so tired. It was such a long illness to watch someone you love. And we were with him when he died. And we just wanted to move. You know, there's the practicalities of a funeral. And it was the most amazing funeral. Lots of military people came down and they played The Last Post and everything, and it was amazing. But he died end of November, with the funeral before Christmas, then it's Christmas, and then life takes over. And we had also been really fortunate that a lot of people had been supporting us while he was ill, so like I think a book deadline. Oh, so he also knew that we were writing a second book, so that was good. I'm trying to remember, I don't think he knew that we were going to open a cafe. I think he would have liked that. I don't think that was all happening then, so that was nice.
I don't think it was.
No. So, you know, I do feel sad. I feel lucky to have my mum still fighting fit. She's great. I feel sad. Also, I feel like because my dad wasn't around when I was growing up, I feel sad because I feel like we would have really started to become close now.
Yes.
We were never... And I think this is another interesting thing. I think I'm... It's not like I was daddy's girl and he was my best friend. 100% not. He was my dad. He was, you know... very unemotional, and he was a very brilliant man, and he was completely devoted to the military. After he left the military, he started working for the Ministry of Defence, and I think I feel so sad that we would have probably become really good friends.
Yes, later
and,
in life.
And also I feel like I'm grieving because I didn't really know all the great things he did, and actually at the funeral. And I've been working a lot with the British Legion, who are the people behind the Poppy Appeal. And I went and cooked. Oh my gosh, this was hilarious. In the build up to the 100-year centenary of World War One, the armistice, I went to the Chelsea pensioners and I made them coronation cauliflower.
Oh, I wish I'd seen that. What did they say about
it? It was so funny.
Did you tell them it's cauliflower?
Yeah, they knew. So I made sure they knew what was coming. So I wanted to do... So it was all about rationing and World War rationing. So I also thought about how cauliflower is so delicious and it's such an English veg and it's so cheap. And so I did coronation cauliflower. Of course, the coronation was in 1950 something, so after the war. But I was just trying to think of something English-ish. Mm. And they thought that was hilarious. But just even being around army people and so on, I didn't... never really realised the great things that he did. And I think it must have been, you know, you have a real duty to your country, and then of course you have your duty to your family. And I'm always really interested when I meet people, men and women my age, and they're in the armed forces, and I to talk to them. And now I feel like I better understand what my dad was going through. And also not to forget my mum, bringing up children in army barracks in England and Germany. And also, my mum's not from this country, she's from the Philippines. It must have been such an alien world for her.
Absolutely. So no wonder they have to sort of almost like literally stiff upper lip, just get on with it. But it's, I think what's so great in one generation, you are doing something different. You're respecting that and you're doing something different, which is, you know, in one, I mean, that's pretty good going, girl. You know, he'd be, you know, if you, but you know, I don't know about, I like the idea of heaven, and if he could look down and see what you guys are doing and how you've rallied is amazing, and he would be really proud of that. I know he would.
Do you know what? He was a great reader, so I know, not that he would have ever used my cookbooks, but I think he would find it happy that it was a, you know, I'm a published author times three.
Yeah.
And, you know, he gosh, I didn't expect to talk about him so much, but you know what I really like is he collected so many books, secondhand bookstores and so on, and, you know, what I really like is in every book, and there are millions in our house, and in my house and in Jazz's house, he'd write the date, how much he bought it for. So, you know, I've got bits of him everywhere.
Well, that's really important, because a lot of people don't have those kind of things with parents that are still alive, you know.
And also, my mum says I get my temper and my impatience from him. So he's definitely there.
Well, there we go. But look, I think what's really key is what we've talked about, which is grief.
Yeah.
Which is sadness, which is about the expression of. And... thank you for being so intimate. We've been naked
in the shower together, haven't we?
We've been rolling in mud. We've been having our feet dried like we were babies together.
That was glorious.
So what a bonding experience. And I'm really glad I've zenned you out. That will be my claim to fame, that I relaxed Melissa Hemsley. And I got her to divulge things that perhaps she might not have if she had been so relaxed. And
well, thanks for the, you know, it's like a free therapy session.
No, wonderful. Well,
I wish we could describe how soft our skin feels right now.
And this towel. Shall we steal the towels?
Yeah.
Do you think we should?
Let's steal. I mean, the problem is it's so big. How are we going to roll it up?
I might just wear it like a pashmina around my neck on the way out and just dare them to say you've still
got the
towel.
Make it look like a coat. Make it look like a coat.
Oh, I love it. Sparse stealing.
And congrats to you, Suzanne.
Oh.
Your beautiful book, your clever book.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Long live the bath.
Long live the humble bath. Amen. Amen to that. Bath and bed.
I hope there's
nice
baths
food.
In heaven.
There has to be.
Whole of heaven could be a bath.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Let's go and do
thank
some
you.
More sparring or immersion
yes.
soon.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for joining us and listening to the Bathe podcast. Don't miss the next episode with Rosemary Ferguson. Rose is a naturopath and she is a nutritionist and she's also an ex-model. So she's hung out with the great and the good of the fashion world and she knows how frenzied and fast-paced that can be. So I've invited her. She doesn't really know what she's in for, I have to say. I've given her a rough idea, but I said, come and get hot and sweaty with me in a banya at the South Kensington Club and I'm going to have a Russian banya and I really hope that she enjoys this. I'm never fully honest because it might freak people out, but it's going to get very hot, very sweaty, and I hope she enjoys it.
I'm from a complementary medicine family. My mum was doing kinesiology on me when it was called Touch for Health. You know, I didn't even know.
Is it called Touch for Health? And just to explain kinesiology, so what would you sound bite that? What is kinesiology?
balancing of the body energies, okay. I'd say. But I mean, it's great.
Is that when you hold something and your muscle reacts as to whether you have an allergy or you need it or not need it?
Yeah, exactly. And it disrupts the energy pathway, so then you lose any power to the arm. I mean, my mum used to do it so you think about stuff. So she would help me with exams, you know, if I had a mind block about a maths exam. All my children now do it. Before you get into an exam, you cross crawl, so you touch your hand to your opposite knee and you sort of march, crossing the hands over.
Oh, yes.
To get
yes.
both parts of the brain working, yes. which is, you know, kind of obvious. But I used to do it religiously. Before every exam, like run to the loo, do a quick cross call, and then go in. And
brilliant.
So, you know, and then my stepdad is a homeopath, and my gran had a health food shop. So I've kind of been surrounded by homeopathy, alternative medicine.
Does anyone know your hero? Face mask.
And of course, you can always jump onto the website, lovetobathe.co.uk, where you'll find lots of other tips and tricks and other bathing recipes and therapies.